Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. Today I'm joined by Skylar Johnson. He's the CEO and founder of basically every company ever. Upon my research, I found that out. So I believe, so you're a co-founder, or is it just the sole founder of Envy? What would you say, co-founder?
Yeah, I would say co-founder out of respect to Hasbro. Started the team in 2008, which I'm sure we'll get into. Yeah. But yeah, so co-founder of that one.
Okay, and then co-founder of Control?
Yep, co-founder of Control as of October 4th, that one launched.
Okay, and then founder of Paper Crowns?
Founder of Paper Crowns, that one. And then I got another one that's going to drop January around the 14th, and that's going to be a good kickoff, and then another one in March. So two more co-founders.
January 14th is actually when this podcast should drop. This actual episode should go live on that date, actually.
Well,
so that's a bit of like inadvertent PR for you.
Yeah, I might at the end of this thing do a special drop or something like that.
Yeah, man. So I'm trying to think when we first spoke. So we first became aware of, well, I was aware of you for a long time. My roots was in Call of Duty, which is obviously where yours is as well. So you started out as a player, correct?
Yeah, so 2008, I made a transition from dabbling in Halo. I got hurt playing college football, American football, and made a transition 2008. Kind of just didn't know much about MLG, didn't know anything actually. And then Game Battles was the thing that was like popping at the time. Like everyone was on Game Battles, Battles forums. And then, yeah, just created Envy in, what was it, November of 2000 or something? Yeah, old head, man. Long time ago.
COD 4. So my roots COD 4 as well. Firmly COD 4, the best Call of Duty to ever come out, without a doubt. I will say that in my opinion. Can you remember the old Deserto when it had a C in its name and it was just a forum? And
everything, man. I was actually one of the bigger like EU guys, like in terms of I would set up scrims against old school SK, Infuse, Dignitas, Sowersby Brothers.
Yes, their montages.
Yeah. So I would actually try to get in those lobbies because I felt if I could play on those hosts, then I'd be good anywhere. But it ultimately ended up messing me up because you have to lead your shots so much more, like aggressive on four. So
playing on like two bar constantly is not the move, mate.
No, I thought I'd get ahead of the curve. It ended up just getting frustrated every custom lobby that we were in. So
what kind of point would you say you went pro in Call of Duty? Because a lot of people have different definitions of going pro, but you know, like placing top 8 at an event, so I've been able to afford to live based off of gaming, really.
Yeah, we got lucky right away. We entered the pro circuit ladder. So we started playing the game in November when it came out. And then March 1st was the first PCL. They called them pro circuit ladders. And we ended up placing third. We placed third in the first tournament I ever actually competed in. And then there was a PCL 2, we ended up placing fourth. And then PCL 3, we got first place. We beat, I think, Team Fear at the time. It was like a classic Envy Fear rivalry back then.
Who were you teaming with at that point?
Stainville. Another guy named Nemesis, and another guy named Fierce. He's still active in the community a little bit. And that team, actually, we were the only team for a full year to stick together. Everyone else was swapping out roster people. We even brought that same team to 2008 Nationals.
Okay.
So the National Championship. We ended up placing second there as well.
Okay, so how did Envy come about, just quickly? I just want to know how that was formed. And were you behind the logo? Because if so, then fair play to you.
Everything. Logo, name, just the whole thing.
I knew it based on how you are now. I had an inkling you'd have come up with that back then.
Yeah, so I think for me, the naming portion isn't a cool story, just being honest. Envy would have been called Flatline, actually. I had it as Flatline for the first 2 weeks.
Okay.
So that's nothing to be proud of.
Wow.
And I ended up changing the name to Envious. I was just scrolling through my iPod, and at the time, there was a song that was just Envious, except they spelled it correctly. I called up my teammates. I was like, hey, listen, we're going to be Envious, because I think it was cooler, a little play on words. And then the logo just came about through doodling. Like I was literally just sketching out certain things, and I ended up giving it off to a guy named Aaron Steinfield. Shout out to him in 2008, man, for making that logo. Actually brought that to life. We threw some wings on it because wings were cool back then. I don't know if you remember, everyone had like wings and little halo things. So that was it, dude. 2008 that one started, and then Hasbro came in 2009. He was our coach at the National Championship, and then 2010, we ended up moving to a team house in North Carolina.
Okay, and at what point did you stop playing and transition to kind of going more behind the scenes?
Oh, man. I was the guy that tried and kept trying. Like, yeah. I didn't want to give it up. So let me quick rundown, I guess, would be 2008, 2009 Nats, and then 2010, we won a national championship, but it was online. We beat Extravagant, who then turned into that Optic squad with Rambo, Merc, Big T, and who was our first? Scump, I guess? I think it had to have been Scump, right?
My memory of stuff back then.
Yeah.
It's not the best when it comes to rosters.
Struggling on that one. But yeah, so that was a solid squad. And then I'd say 2013, I quit maybe right after, not Black Ops 2. Black Ops 2 is when my career started going downhill. I got 16th every event. So I was like, there's something going on here. I was teaming with Burns, Hysteria.
It was because you were playing with Burns. That's
We always joke around, man. We were at an event one time, and I'll never forget it. Weirdest moment in my career was we were up on a hard point, and it was on Raid. And he stood up before the game was over, and he started screaming, and we ended up tying because they jumped on the hill. It was a good team. It was a team of Space Lee and them back then, so it was just it was very funny. But yeah, shout out Burns for that. So.
Jesus Christ, man! So, at what point did you go to G Fuel? Quickly, I know that you're not with them any longer, and we won't discuss it long at all. But so how did come about?
Good question. So the G Fuel thing, I was at the Envious house in North Carolina. I was at the time looking for what my next step was going to be. I was dabbling in making content, YouTube videos. I think it was at like 500 videos at the time, just pumping out as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And then I needed like a next step. I was falling in love with more creative vision. My mother's like an artist, so it was kind of one of those like always surrounded by it. I love the montage realm. I love creating content. And they needed a way into gaming. So 2012, they didn't even have a name, G Fuel, actually. I was there for the inception of that. And I was one of the first 15 people signed. I think I was like top five or whatever. And all of them kind of got weeded out. And I stayed. I developed a relationship with them. And I was there 5-6 years. I got them into a lot of the gaming scene, introduced them to UMG. So I'd say it was like 2012 to 2017,
okay.
November.
Okay. Yeah. And why did you decide to part ways?
It was just a mutual thing, I guess, for me. There was a lot of there's just a lot of things up in the air at the time, and it just wasn't for me to kind of to try to fix. And I didn't think that it had like a future for me to be a part of that. And it was nothing against them, all good peoples. For the most part, we got along until the latter half. So but what's been built over there is impressive, man, especially from when I got there to my departure, and then even post my departure. It's been, it's been a crazy run, and they've definitely earned their way in. There's been a lot of hard work over there, so.
Yeah. So obviously at the beginning we discussed like you've got a few things going on at the moment, but were these things firmly planned out when you decided to leave, or did you just kind of leave and then decide what to do after?
Yeah, that was actually the scariest part, man. I had no plan, no vision. I just knew being there wasn't for me anymore. And then I ended up picking up a job at a sunroom company, ironically enough, and nobody ever knew it. Sunrooms are like, you know what sunrooms are? Yeah.
Well, I would assume, with, I don't know, but I assume it's like a tanning place, but I don't know for sure. That's what it sounds like.
So it's like a roommate. It's like a home edition. Like for your home, you go out, they put them onto your house, dude. Don't even ask, but...
Oh, right.
I brought my whole creative team over to this company with me called Latium, actually. The Kennedys is a big, powerful family. And they headhunted me from G Fuel, and they said, hey, we have a secret project that we're working on. However, we also have this sunroom company that we want you to develop social medias for. So I developed all those socials with a great team of people, and basically just brought my whole G Fuel creative team over to this new company. Right. And then they started developing a company called Vitapod, which already came out. We developed that whole company, which you'll see it drop, or it's already dropped the teaser version of it, but they're going to do like a hard drop come about May. Okay. And we developed that whole brand as well. So we've been white labeling our services, just developing brands in the background and not really mentioning or talking about it much.
And how did you go about transitioning that into esports? What was your kind of first gig there? And how did you convince people to give you a chance?
So the biggest thing for me, man, was telling myself, hey, I need to prove that I can leave esports with a great group of individuals and prove that I can do more than just esports marketing, right? So prove that I can do more than just the launch activations that we did for flavor campaigns or new talent searches or company mergers. So I told myself, how can I do that? The best bet for me at the time was Sunroom Company, because I knew nothing about it, knew nothing about the market, but I like learning. And I thought it would develop a skill set towards a non-endemic strategy in case then I could take those non-endemic companies and bring them back into esports.
Okay.
Ironically enough, I got a phone call from Sundance, and then that was company number two, I guess, on the run, or three, whatever it was at the time. And yeah, he wanted me to dive into what was then an energy drink, but that's an interesting story by itself. So,
okay. And obviously when you get a call from Sundance, you don't turn it down, you know, you're like, okay, I have to hear what he's going to say at this point.
Yeah. So he, basically, I don't eat into that one as well. Yeah.
What's that? Sorry.
Yeah. So I'll just dive into that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So Sundance hit me up and said, hey, I want to start an energy drink. I want it to be different. I want it to have product benefits that I feel comfortable enough giving my kids, because that's one of the biggest things for Sunny is he just wants everyone to be able to use it. No discrepancies, no problems, no issues with, hey, is this safe or is it not?
Yeah.
I was honest with him and I told him I have no interest in that. My energy drink run was over. I don't care if it was Red Bull, Monster. They came to me and said the same thing. It just wasn't for me to be solely energy drink anymore. I kind of just got sick of it. I called him back and said, listen, I have an idea. I'll never forget you sitting by the pool. And I was like, I have an idea for a product. It is kind of supporting the health and wellness of gamers. And he's open for it. And that was Control. So we came up with Control, catered to real life. And it's a meal replacement. It tastes like the bottom of a cereal bowl. Play on it because the nostalgia, number one. And then number two, it just tastes good. So we've had really good success with that. But the biggest thing developing that brand was wanted the aesthetic to look top notch and then proper ingredients. So I went to two like nutrition specialists that really helped me carve out the new nutrition profile. And a lot of people don't even know those key benefits that are in there. But we're going to start to slowly turn that. As you can tell, we've been signing a lot of big names.
Yeah.
So
no lead in your products at all.
No.
I'm just asking. I'm not trying to insinuate anything else from there.
not in the product, man.
So obviously Sensor classes himself as is it co-owner? He classes himself as of Control. Is Skump in the same place as well? Or is he
Fully,
is as well.
Yeah, and there's full transparency on that, man.
Okay.
Pretty much our partners, we want to do it a little bit different. We want this to be that long-term play where kind of everyone's have reasons. I think it's just super important for us to be able to put that on a run of, hey, like, let's do this together.
Okay.
And we have some partners that will be dropping in January. That's one of the bigger things I've done in my career that I'm super excited for, actually. That'll be a January thing. So,
well, hopefully this will come out before that. If not, then I'm late to the story, unfortunately.
No, not at all, man.
So how do you go about, like, well, I understand you, like, you fully are aware of the benefits of having, like, influencers, and you've gone to, like, so Call of Duty people with Skump and Sensor, right? They were kind of among the first gaming celebrities. Call of Duty kind of, in my opinion, at least bred the first, like, stars in that sense. And obviously you come from that world as well, so it must have been quite easy for you to get them on board, having like pre-existing relationships with them, right?
That's the biggest thing, man, is I see all these companies that talk about influencer marketing and they talk about how you need these influencers, and to be honest, but to me, they're not influencers, they're my friends, you know? So like one of the bigger benefits with me is like, I have great relationships with so many people in this community and they've done so many favors for me and vice versa. So it was a no brainer. You know, I literally went over to Doug's house. I said, try this. He was like, love it. What's in it? I sat down with him, showed him everything, and he was like, this is what I want to be a part of. So he was there from the trial run, same as Skump, same with our next partners. We're just really selective on when we announce, because it's not about just sale, sale, sale. I think when people do that, it just desaturates you know, like the companies now, I think, are doing a good job of focusing on a blend of content versus sale-oriented content.
Okay.
But for us, it's more about like, hey, this is a real deal product that we want to stick around for a while, not like a gimmick where it's just in, sell, and get out.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I get you. I just want to shift a little bit, actually, while I remember. So obviously Sensor's on NYSL and Skump's with Chicago Huntsman, and that's a big shift for Call of Duty. And with your roots in Call of Duty, where basically like the esports side started, do you think for like franchising is a good step for the scene in general, and for the eSport or not? Because I'm on the fence. I think adopting like Overwatch League's format, which it hasn't even tried out itself properly yet, is a massive risk, obviously, and Activision Blizzard are risking it with 12 other companies' money for the most part. So I'm not too sure on it myself.
Me neither, and I think anyone that pretends to know, like, you can be excited. I think there should be heavy excitement, but I don't think people should sit around and say it's good or bad yet. And the reason I say that is, and I know I'm saying that with 25 million invested and all these crazy numbers, but you just don't know, right? Like, there's still a lot of proving ground that needs to happen, and they need to be very careful in how they rip apart these teams, these legacies, these. Like, they need to have legacy hour and be okay with it. They need to be okay with talking about a thing in the past instead of deading it. Yeah. That's what this community is built on. It's built on rivalries of aches, push, and nade.
Yeah.
It's built on
legendary moment.
Yeah, there's just so many things that this this community that, like, we're all part of is built around. And if they eliminate all that, I just don't think that's the way to go. So I think flashback hour or something needs to happen. There needs to be a Hall of Fame. I've been pushing for that aggressively. No one hears my cry, but there needs to be some form of Hall of Fame set up where once you make that, like, give the players something to play for more than just money now, which is crazy and great, you know. But I remember national championship for me in 2008 was $12,000. And then in 2010, it was 18,000. So there, you know, there were called Nats back then, you know, it wasn't a Call of Duty World Championship or anything like that.
Well, I've got some bad news for you on this front, right? So I can't say where I've heard this from, and I can't be exact on the figure, but a substitute player on one of the teams that appears to be one of the worst in the league is earning over $80,000 a year.
As I'm friends with a lot of these people, I'm not going to tell you the numbers, but shout out to you for knowing the numbers.
That's an outrageous thing for someone who's not even going to play and doesn't even have an audience for themselves to stream and get any value in that sense either.
Yeah,
outrageous money, mate.
You know, there's quarter, half a million dollars more.
And you know where to allocate those numbers to, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, for someone who's not even playing, mate, like, I'll sit on a bench and I'll take 50k. You know what I mean?
I'm about to come out of retirement. These old thumbs are about to get to work, man.
Oh, glad.
So.
We should both go for it. We'll buy a franchise. We'll buy a franchise slot when they inevitably expand next season.
Next season's going to be interesting too. The proving ground of this, I think, is going to be about trying to get general public more involved. It's always been that, right? Which I'm mind blown at how college campus, no one's going to college campus. Like, I'd go old school, just foot traffic with that thing. I would have these things set up to, like, let's say Minnesota is the first one. I'd go to Minnesota University, surrounding community colleges, and say, this tournament is here. Here's your sign up thing. And I'd be doing that months in advance, maybe even a month in advance, to find a cycle that works. And the marketing tactics that they're doing are just so e-blast focused and put it on the game. And that's cool and all, but you really need to show people that this is a real deal thing coming to your city. Mm. And I would hype that up a little bit more. So
I mean, I've actually sold Modern Warfare now because it was literally the worst COD I've ever played. I couldn't play more than two games without punching my desk as hard as I could, like, genuinely. And I'm just like, okay, well, this is obviously not the game for me. But I'm pretty sure, or I haven't seen anything about it, where there's actually anything in game yet which suggests that there's a Call of Duty League happening. There's no information there, and we're about a month out at the time of recording this from the launch weekend in Minnesota, right? Well, Minneapolis is the official. Yeah. Is it Minneapolis? I don't know. I don't know America very well, mate. I'll be honest with you.
I'm pretty sure it's Minneapolis, Minnesota. Minneapolis, St. Paul is kind of right next to each other. So those are like the two combined cities.
I only care about the London one, mate. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, here we go. The Ravens. Isn't that what you guys got?
The Ravens? Royal Ravens.
Royal Ravens.
Which has a problem of its own, because to use the word royal in a name like that, you have to get approval. Because obviously we've got a bunch of old monarchs and such.
Right.
And I mean, you're very happy about it, so.
I think royalty comes with something there as well, you know, like royalty, you have to earn royalty, right? That's what they say. So.
Well, not if you're born into it like most of the people these days, but but no, so even then it's owned by an American company. You know what I mean? It's Wrecked Global that owns Royal Ravens, so it doesn't even feel too authentic in that sense.
How much do you know about those teams? I guess, like, who do you predict to do well? Have you thought about those at all?
Okay, well, so Dallas Empire have been absolutely destroying in scrims. So, I mean, it's all online, and Dallas has apparently got really good internet and such, so I don't want to put too much stock into the online practice and stuff. But I'd say they're looking the best, and that's kind of universally understood. But then I personally think the best roster on paper is the Huntsman. So they've got like Arcees, Envoy, Scump, Formal. Like, yeah, I don't know how you can bet against those. You know, they haven't announced their coach yet, but I'd be surprised if Teep didn't go there. Like, yeah, that would make the most. That makes the most sense to me, at least. So, I mean, that squad to me on paper has to be the one that turns up. That's where I put my money anyway, despite Empire doing the best so far.
Got it. For me, I don't have, I guess, a favorite.
Well, it's because you're friends with them all, so you don't want to upset any.
It is true. It was hard to see. So I could tell you that was one of the biggest things, is seeing those teams that you never would have thought, and the way that they did it. I'm pro draft. I think a draft would have been so sick, and that's because I got to go film the NBA 2K League draft.
Yeah.
And I thought one of the coolest things in my career was actually going to that thing, just seeing like the full stage setup, the money and development put in on that thing was just insane. I thought like a draft would be so cool to see, but then again, how does that work out? You know, I guess that there's a lot of logistics you got to figure out for that to work. So
no, without a doubt. And so obviously I'm not creative at all, but you are a very creative person, and obviously doing what you're doing. So I want to get your take on this. What do you think of the overall, like the naming and the branding of the franchises? You don't have to go in and upset anyone yourself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll go out on a ledger and say, I think a lot of them are shit, but I mean, You're the one with the expertise there. So I just want to see what you think of them. Cause when I compare the Overwatch League, like at least the initial teams compared to the initial teams in the CDL, I don't think it's really a competition as to which one seems better, sounds better, and looks better, you know?
Yeah, I'm worried, you know? Like, I think the way that they did it, like, obviously these names are going to grow on people. The Subliners at first, shout out to you for leaking it,
that name for the record.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't at first. You know, there's a lot of these names, and the naming portion is different. I have three names already up my sleeve. I might be working with somebody soon to help them in 2021.
Put it already, Jesus.
Yeah, already. But you know, that's like a long lead time on that. So they got to get ready by June. They need to have that. But regardless, I'm not a fan. Like I'm a fan of the league in general. I'm a fan of what they're doing. Expansion is huge. Change is needed. We all know all these things, but I'm not a fan of, I feel like they've been designed out of the community. Right, like I feel like they're going like a little corny. I'm not going to throw out some of the names that I think are corny, but some of them don't make sense, or some of them are very hard to understand. And I think from a branding perspective, the biggest thing needs to be inviting, number one. You got to have cool stuff, right? Like, you got to have awesome merch. Everyone loves awesome merch. Yeah. And some of these teams didn't set themselves up to be able to do that. But also forward thinking on that is classic campaigns, products. Like, things like that need to be thought of at that branding stage where, you know, hey, in 15 years or 10 years, whatever, 5 years, we'll be able to expand to this, or we can have a sub company under that makes sense, you know, like you're playing on one of the team names or something like that. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said. But 2021 is going to, you know, it's all just learning. You know, can you change a team name? Like, is that going to be a thing? Like, can you say, like, the so-and-so formerly known as, or not?
I don't know specifics about Activision Blizzard's leagues there, but, I mean, it's been done in other franchises, like Spartan leagues, right?
Right.
Like, moving locations, I believe, right? So,
yeah.
So, I mean, potentially. If you probably have to pay, like, another 25 mil or something, knowing them.
Well, then it's not my conversation to have, man. I'm out of those 25 million conversations.
Oh, so. Two, right, yeah. I don't know. I think based on how the announcements were made, you can kind of tell which teams are going to do the best in terms of engaging the audience and stuff and actually catering to them. So you see, like Ultra had their own, Toronto Ultra, sorry, had their own event, and there they were selling branded stuff, and they've got Ultra as Fuck, and they've come up with a very different tone, like kind of like antithetical to what Call of Duty normally is. They're like really silly and not very serious at all, and almost a bit flirty, which is a tad strange. Yeah. But like Huntsman came out with a Founders hoodie, which you could pre-order without actually knowing the branding yet. Like, that's really cool. And then you just see Paris Legion, for example. Oh, you can buy a white t-shirt with our logo on.
Yeah. And There's something to be said about that gap, though. How come, you know, like what's happening now? Is Activision taking over the league to where basically now you can't sell your merch? Because I think that's about to happen. I think everything's going to get funneled through. You know the drill. Like, you know,
bring Fnatic in or something like that. Even though they did a piss poor job with the Overwatch League for their first season of doing it. So, I mean, they had to bring in like ult halfway through and supplement that, you know.
Or maybe they'll partner and have them both work on it. Who knows, right?
You probably know. That's the annoying thing.
No. You're the journalist, man. This is your gig.
Oh, I leak enough stuff. I have to keep some bits private, you know. I can't say everything. I already piss enough people off as it is, mate. I'll be completely honest with you. And I'm kind of picking and choosing which developer to piss off at once. Smart. So at the moment, it's PUBG Corp that I'm going at. At the time of recording this, I've got two big pieces which will really piss them off. I don't know when they'll drop. Hopefully, right at the beginning of the new year, I'll be working on them. Probably Christmas Day and shit, knowing me. Just working away at them. But I'll probably turn my attention to Activision Blizzard. But I think I've done enough so far when I leaked all of the brands a few weeks before they were announced, I guess.
That was iconic, bro. I the journalism play for me is so interesting. I have so much respect. I got to present the Esports Coverage of the Year Award to Deserto. The Esports Awards. And that was just, it was so crazy, man, just to see like people that I grew up like, just talking to about random stuff or seeing at events, and they were like struggling to record stuff with no equipment. They're recording on like iPhones, and now to see them winning awards and stuff, there's just so much praise, man, in this community. That the speech that was given was insane by Richard, right?
Oh,
that
God,
was a
yeah.
good one.
Yeah,
dude, crazy. And these are the things that I hope protect the community, right? Like that's one of the themes for 2020. Is really protect this community, because it could not be ours, you know. And it's flirting online now with all the money being thrown around. We got to protect it the best we can, I think, and be open to change. But it's just push back on the things we know we should push back on, and be collective about it, I think.
Yeah, and I think you can rely on the same old people to do that. But I don't think there's too many people outside of those select few that are actually willing to stand up against whatever it is, no matter what, even if it's like I've told this quite a lot. So I'm full-time editor for Esports Insider, and if I found out that people above me were doing some dodgy shit, like the first thing I would do is fucking call that shit out. Like it's just in my nature. It's just like I see something bullshit, I call it out. I've always kind of been that way. But I will say a lot of my peers, like the journalists or so-called journalists, whatever you want to call them, or bloggers, whatever, in esports. No, not really. It's just some people just don't actually do anything besides write match reports, and it's like at a certain point. But like they would rather protect relationships and potential jobs down the line rather than call things out. And I'm like, if at that point, then don't call yourself a journalist, because you're not actually serving the purpose you claim to be serving, you know.
Yeah, there's a big problem in the community with the designers, first of all, journalists, all the people that are kind of making this big wheel turn that aren't funneling money in, aren't getting compensated the way that they should be. There is so much talent in this community, man. Like I'm surrounded by designers all day. Like my creative team, I think, is the best, but I'm biased. But I just see other people just putting out like work for free. Designing logos for $50, doing things that in the real world that I didn't know about until my transition, just being honest, people pay a lot of money for those things, you know. People pay a lot of money for a brand development. People pay a lot of money for something that has legs, that can walk around and say, hey, like, this is who we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money that needs to be kicked back in, especially like journalism coverage, the esports coverage, the content, the casters. Like, I really hope 2020 exploits a lot of the know your worth type of thing.
Yeah,
I think that'd be pretty powerful. So
I agree on the whole know your worth thing, right? Because I will say a lot, not a lot, but a select few, I guess, of journalists in esports that I've seen tend to think that they're worth more than what they are actually worth. And I know it's not a quantifiable thing; it's rather subjective, right? But so you'll see, like Dot Esports, second biggest publication in the scene, hiring, and it's standard news writing stuff, and then people will come out against it and say, oh no, you can't work for this much. Like, no, I'm definitely worth a lot more. But it's like, then you see them actually put shit out on another publication, and they are fucking dire. And it's like, I see it all the time. Like, literally, I think people do need to know their worth, but that works both ways. It's like some people do deserve it, and it's good to see, obviously, like, Thorin and Richard getting paid what they deserve at Deserto, right? And, like, yeah. I think I'm paid adequately for what I do. And like, Jacob Wolf, he probably getting paid rather fucking well with that Disney money, you know, for example. But, yeah, there are some people who, for some reason, feel entitled to a certain amount of money, even though they don't actually bring anything to the table that no one else does. In my opinion, at least. And obviously, yeah, I've got a skewed way of looking at things, but that's what I think. I do think people need to know the worth, but it definitely works both ways, in my opinion.
No, dude, you're 100% right. I think, but that comes into, like, what are your yearly goals, right? Like, for me, I sit down every quarter and reevaluate, right? Just, like, what am I bringing to the table that's making me evolve in the next quarter? Like, what am I going to do that can constantly, you know, the complacency thing, right? So, like, mm-hmm. anything that you've done in the past should already be thrown away, right? Or any of the guys. Like, yes, you should get compensated for how good you are, but everything is changing. So when the landscape changes, you need to change with it, expand skill sets, or at least show why this or that, you know? So we definitely know that. But I think it's a good thing that these questions are being raised and people are getting paid, like you said. It's a scary thing too, right? Like, there's so much. Rumor has it that you're going to be Journalist of the Year. So, like, you got to evolve. Like, what are you going to do?
Richard didn't quite say that. He said, I'll be the next big thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win Journalist of the Year because...
Well, I just said it. so you
know what I'm like. I'm not the most, like... I don't have a lot of, like, self-pride, right? But I will say, there's no way... On this earth, in this dimension, that I don't win Reporter of the Year at the UK Esports Awards again next year, for example, right? Because literally, there's no one else really doing fuck all, and that's going to piss some people off. But there's a few people, but like, last year, my output was fucking insane, and this next year, my quality is going to be insane. So I don't personally see it at a world in which I lose that, but I don't think... the Esports Awards 2020, I'll be in Arlington in a tux and a dad hat still, like picking up an award and giving out a speech, you know. A nod would be nice, though. I'll take a nod, like if I do the work that's worthy for it, but it's hard to say, isn't it?
The humble aspect of you is great, and I think it's all good fun to push to get it, but I think that with your work ethic, it's going to shake up the scene, and I think that's more important than anything, any award and anything. Shaking things out, man.
I'm sick of people being nice. I can't take it. It's not even about being humble. It's not in the back of my mind. I'm like, oh, I'm the shit. It's like, no, I'm shit. Like, and that, I think that's what actually helps me, though, because I always feel like I could do more and I could do better. And while I'm not working, there's some other fucker that is, which really ain't the case in esports besides, like, four people. But, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I've always got that mentality. I can never sit down and acknowledge that I've done a good job and that, we're nearing towards the end of 2019. I'm not going to just think, oh, I've done a really good job this year. I'm already looking ahead and planning my pieces for next year and how I'm going to elevate esports inside of next year and what the team's going to look like for the next year, you know, how we can be better as a publication as well as myself individually. So I don't think it's the humble thing as much as I never allow myself to even look back at what's been going on, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I got nothing but high praise for you. That's all I'm gonna say.
And like I told Richard on the Spitfire podcast, I will PayPal you after this because I don't know. I definitely don't think I deserve that, but I do appreciate it nonetheless. So I guess when I interviewed you for Esports Insider around the time of you launching Control, I think this was included in the interview, but you said about like we don't really know about the wear and tear of esports yet. We don't know how, in 10 years' time, for example, these pros will, if their wrists are fine, if their fingers are fine, how the posture's going to be and such. What are your kind of thoughts on that?
Man, I'm good friends with a lot of these pros. And every time we have a chat, there's conversation about like their fingers cramping up. And I know it sounds silly. It sounds ridiculous. But when you think about it, you do the same thing. There's a lot of arthritis that comes into play for anything, right? So like, arthritis is a big problem that needs to be promoted, I hope, within the next year or two in terms of not companies coming in. It needs to be regulated within the teams. They need to put some of that $25 million to use from each team and just take care of the players, you know. And I know it sounds crazy, but there's a reason that players, whether it's ice their hands or they have like just different massage techniques, I'm sure, you know, this isn't something I'm a specialist in, but I think it's something that people should become specialists in because my hands hurt sometimes. you know, and that's just from playing as much as they do. And I think eye health is big. I think could be the rise of Gunnar Optic again or someone around.
Yeah, well,
there.
I think is it like gamer advantage or gamers advantage or something like that. I think they're doing the same kind of thing.
Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of like I see like cognitive brain pills, and that's when it gets extreme to me. I'm against that. I think the drug testing of some of these things for Adderall use. The biggest thing is just taking care of the players in this long term picture, right? So like the fitness aspect of gaming has gone so far, like, and I'm so happy. You know, people aren't, you don't have to be jacked and shredded, and you just have to be healthy, right? And that's the biggest thing for me, man. I speak on this, and that's one of the biggest reasons why Control was made is. When I started gaming and I was hurt off football, man, I gained like 110 pounds that I had to then lose. And I'm a big boy. So imagine me with another 110 pounds, man. That's not a pretty thing. And that happened. And losing that taught me at the same time, like when you have a sedentary lifestyle, you need to make sure that you're active. You have to wake up in the morning just an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier to get your workout in or post, you know. And yeah, looking good feels good, right? But the biggest thing is your health. Because you don't want to start after your career is over. What happens in your body, you know? But eating healthy is big. And I heard a lot of these training facilities that these players have, they're going to be able to do that, which is all crazy to think of.
Yeah. I think Complexity are doing it probably best at the moment. Their facility is insane. And obviously, they've just done their the recent partnership. I don't know if you saw that with, is it Herman? Is it Miller? I don't know all these brand names, but like the expensive like chair. They're like furniture place, right? That like they've just partnered there. Jason Lake came out and said these gamer chairs that were being sold through partnerships and sponsorships and such are just they're not good enough at all. And then and then he comes through with that big boy partnership like a couple of weeks later.
He's doing it right. He's always been. I know him a little bit, you know, here and there. We've seen each other off and on. Good friends with the NBA at the time, but he's always been kind of ahead of it and just making it go. You know, I think that's what it takes. I think it's just education. We have a due diligence to educate more and more people in this, just on all of these things, right? Because you know companies are flooding in, and it's how they get welcomed in. That's the best part to me is I'll see some companies, like some non-endemics, they'll be like the classic for gamer, by gamer. I hate that thing. It's like one of the worst things ever, but everyone wants to use it like it means something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it.
What would you say has been the most impressive non-endemic sponsor of this year? I'm interested.
Oof,
I know there's been about 50 million people coming in, obviously, but
yeah, that to me, I man,
it is a tough one, but
yeah, I want to say, I hate to answer it like this, but I can't give a proper answer without looking at kind of the content delivery and the messaging, you know. And I think if I were to just throw one out, I don't have that one that I throw out, so clearly, maybe nobody,
fair point,
and I don't know if you do, but I don't think that everyone's necessarily doing it right.
No, that's fair play. Yeah, and I definitely say you can almost tell the companies that are coming in just to try and get a return, you know, and other ones that actually want to come in and integrate properly. So, like with Puma, you'll probably say Puma, but it's Puma. I'll be honest with you, it's 100%
Puma. Puma
like partnering with Cloud9, so initially it was just for the League of Legends, the LCS, and then they expanded and then create some incredible, what I think is incredible content. You have higher standards than me, but like around the drop, and then the drop was great as well, and that seems great until they just released that gamer sock thingy the other day, which was the most appalling thing I've ever seen myself. But so like there I'm conflicted, like they seemed great and then they release a gamer shoe or sock and I'm just like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
I agree with that. I think the aesthetic was off, and just that whole thing is crazy to me. Like I remember back in the day, no one really knows this, but Tosh or Stainville and myself, we used to put baby powder on our hands before we would play every game.
Okay.
Because I used to sweat a lot in my hands. Like I think I was just nervous. I don't know what it was at the time. Probably nerves. But we used to put baby powder on our hands. From that is Hasbro actually came out with a product called Gamer Grip at the time. And we were originally calling it Ponage Powder or some stupid thing. No, we weren't doing that. Hold on. Let me refresh before I say that.
Mate, I'll judge you forever if that was you're doing that.
It originally was called Ponage Powder, and then it shifted to Gamer Grip when we were like, hold on, man, like this whole thing ain't working.
Shit.
But yeah, that's old school things, man. That's back in, I want to say 2010, you know? And then now that's a separate business to Scuff, but they're merged together type of thing. So I've seen all these companies come and go. I've seen the ones that work, you know, I've seen, I'm not going to name drop to the ones that didn't work because I feel
that's
bad.
Boring.
Yeah. Pro Freak used to be a pretty big, knowledgeable one. I don't know if they're still booming in sales or whatever, but like they kind of fell off from taking over. You know, like when Control Freak first dropped, they were used by every pro or mm-hmm. whatever, their controller extensions. And then once you go that general public route, like, yeah, you kind of lose like your firm hold in the community, I think, because you start focusing outward on general public consumers, like people that are just playing where the real money is, right? Like get into that Best Buy, get into those GameStops, do those things. But as you know, brick and mortar's dying, so people aren't going to these stores anymore. Amazon's more of a thing. So it's like a lot of companies I've seen come and go. But I think this year, 2020, is going to welcome the biggest sponsors we've had yet, as you see with just the artists that are getting involved, like music artists, mm-hmm. Celebrities, athletes. 2020 is going to open up that door wide open, and I think there's going to be so much money thrown around. There's a problem for a little bit, like a teeter-totter, and then we got to find a way to balance it out, and then we're probably going to deal with that for 4 years from getting into that, but 4 or 5 years, and then over time, everything's going to pan out as everything does, you know? It's a lot of people pretending they know what they're doing, but they don't want to admit they don't.
So. Oh, without a doubt. Well, actually, I wrote a story earlier today, and it was Immortals partnering with a company called Ironclad Performance Wear. And I don't have a clue who they are, but they're releasing a gamer glove, which is supposed to help with like perspiration and grip. And they've worked with IGC's, which is Immortal Gaming Club's family of teams, so obviously like MIBR and you got LA Valiant and stuff like that. You know, apparently that's coming out in 2020. So a gamer glove designed by gamers for gamers to stop you sweating, and you know what I mean, it'll just keep going on. But the thing is, why are these organizations willingly allowing these companies to come in and use their association, you know, to kind of get some sort of grip on the industry? It's so strange to me. Why would they do that?
Yeah, I think the gamer glove thing I've seen now 4 times. This would be the 4th one. I didn't know about the one that you're speaking on, but I've seen that happen already. At the end of the day, like, maybe it's good, but you know, it's money, man. Everyone needs to pay on. People are scooping it up to try to get back some of that investment. I think that they'll take on what they can, and who knows if they really use it, they're forced to use it. But the thing about a gamer glove is it's just going to hold on your 3/4 of your hand, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like you're going to have your fingers poking out, unless it's a full-scale glove. But then don't you want to touch the keyboard or touch your controller? Obviously, most would. You know, and then Squid Grip, remember those?
I used to have them and Control Freak on my controller at once, yeah.
Of course, you see, you were that guy.
I was a little COD scrub, 100%. Yeah.
And you know, like, even Scuff, when they first came in, I hated Scuff, and now they're a family to me.
I've never used one in my life.
We got to get you to get
Well, I'll tell you why, though. Why am I admitting this? I hold the controller weird. Not like I don't like claw it or anything. No, not even that. Not even that. Just when I started playing when I was like 12, 13. And I don't know. I've just never quite held it right. So I couldn't really use the back paddles properly. So I've never actually forked out for them. And plus, I was always too good anyway. So there's no point in me making myself even better. It's unfair and I'll get banned for hacking and shit, you know. But yeah, for some reason, I don't quite hold the controller properly. So I've never been able to use Scuff, but definitely was on Squid Grip. Forgot that existed. And definitely was on Control Freak. Forgot that existed also. 100%.
We got to get your Scuff sent out, man. Shout out to Alex over at Scuff.
We need like paddles at like the bottom where you grip it or something, like some real weird shit as opposed to at the back of the controller, because I'm all over the shop, mate. But yeah. As I say, I've literally saw Modern Warfare because it's just piss poor. Do you have much time to game anymore? I assume not.
I mean, I do on occasion, but I play under a tag that no one would know. Not like I'm like that legit or whatever. I just do it to just go in and have a fun time.
Still, you know? Call of Duty or.
Yep. I still do COD. And then sometimes if like my little brother's on, we'll go kick back like any form of throwback game that we can. So I more so don't do competitive as much, just because if someone on some game battles matches or like so the tourney matches or whatever they have. But outside of that, man, nothing crazy. For me, I'm on like new competition now, you know. It's not like I love watching, you know. I'll always watch. I'll always give predictions. You know, getting into casting was something I was thinking about doing, but for me, it's just this is a new form of competition, is building businesses and really trying to be successful on that.
Yeah. Well, in terms of casting Call of Duty, what they seem to do for some reason is just hire friends instead of getting them. Yeah. And I'm not saying you're not the best person for the job, but I mean, like, you're friends with them, so you would get in by default. I think that's their policy there. It's like, Oh, Pac-Man. Oh, you know these players. You've played with these before. Oh, come on in. Like, even though you're shit. Like, you didn't say that. I did, but he's shit. Studies, okay. Nameless, not very good. Katie's the best one, and she fucking came from politics and journalism, I'm pretty sure. So they need to fucking learn something. I'm sick of it.
This is why I love you doing your deep man. I played in 2008 national championship against him. Can't say much. Nameless, I've known since. He's an OG legend. He's been around since COD 3.
Yeah. He's a long time. Yeah.
Study. He's the homie. So I can't say anything. And then Katie Bedford, we are developing her Twitch package right now through Paper Crown. So
oh, sweet.
I can't.
Well, no. She's been doing well with it. She hasn't been streaming long at all, right? But she's doing great. But yeah, I see. I don't know how you can go from having Puckett and people and then go to I don't want to be too mean, especially because you're friends with them, but like, yeah, I don't like the whole thing where it's like, oh, you don't have to leave the scene, come on, you can just speak about it and be the face of Call of Duty instead of like just making them be a coach or an S&D analyst or some shit, you know. It just winds me up.
And I love the fact that you say it and your opinion is strong. I think we need to get back more into shoutcasting from old school COD 4 days. I used to watch all the COD 4 pro mod PC players. And I used to watch gaming just to get a heads up on like crossing routes. So for example, on Strike, where you can jump up on the tent, watch how many cross to bomb zones.
But yes, man. Oh, you'd hop onto the hop onto the bomb and oh my God.
Yeah. So all those
taking
things.
Me back.
Dude, all those things came from the PC world where it didn't get enough respect and people still don't know about those montages or Mazzarini's montage or Katha. Anything Katha touched was sick. So I think there's things that need to happen. Like I remember when we brought Rivington over to do shoutcasting for Envy, actually. So, and Fwiz was sleeping on our couch for a night or two. He right before he made that switch to Optic, and there's just so much history in this thing where I think shoutcasting needs to become a thing again. That's a big one, like real shoutcasting, you know, like the we're coming up with words. Like I always, every time I see Chris Puckett, obviously, you know, because he built Halo through his energy. I think the more of that energy brought, which people are doing a great job, you know, like all those old school heads though, like Merc, Nameless, Study, all of them. Pack they know the game because they've been around long enough, and I think now they just need to develop their skill set, which yet again everything changes, so hopefully they're perfecting their craft, so to speak.
It's not like I'm not disrespecting them from a place of like I don't respect what they've done or acknowledge what they've done. It's just that I think there are people who do that for a living who are really good at it, and then there's some people who get brought into it. But like, actually, I think my prediction, not the most bold of predictions, but instead of bringing in people, they'll just stick with the same people for franchising. But I'd prefer them to kind of give everything a fresh lick of paint and try new things out, you know, at least have like a rotating like roster of casters and talent and see which one sticks the best with the fans. But I could see they're just going, I imagine at least they'll just do the same old, and you'll know, but you can't say it again, so that's fine.
I think no different than like a graphic designer pumps out a cool graphic for a team or something like that, or enters a contest, right, for these movie companies. I think that should be done for casting. I think there should be like more gameplays dropped at a random, and then you're forced to do casting on them. I think that would be so cool for the community. You pop that on Twitter, you know, just do like a random cast over that. I think that'd be a good idea and really showcase skill sets and how it can evolve. I don't really see a lot of casters like doing that yet or anymore, you know?
No. Right, so I understand we're getting kind of towards the end now, so I'll bring up one more thing and then we can call it a day, mate. So what do you think are the biggest missed opportunities in terms of like revenue streams and such for organizations? Obviously you're past at Envy, and now obviously everything you're doing present date, you've got quite a unique kind of stance and perspective, I'd say.
Yeah, this one's a crazy one, man. A piece of me doesn't want to say because I'm still trying to capitalize on them. Just being honest with you. Like, for example, I think it blows my mind how last year, give this freebie away, like they did a full MLG season or a full COD World League season, and basically there was no fan cam, right? Like, imagine if they just hook a fan cam and attach that to a sponsor, and that fan cam basically just stays on the crowd during a crazy moment. So, like, let's tie back to the control fan cam. for example, or like catch yourself on the fan cam this week and you get a free bag of control, right? And I'm just shouting it out, but do you get what I'm saying with the placement?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And there's a bunch of things, and everyone yet again needs to be doing these things, forward thinking. I think it's important, but opportunity wise is going to happen in the tech side of it for sure. I think the development of not Twitch extensions, but things for streamers that can really kind of help map out their success, their track record, and their route of success is going to be important. There's a lot of products that are going to come out that are important. Come on, man. You can't do this to me when I'm trying to make a living over here, bro. I'm trying to change the game. I can't give away the secret sauce, man.
Okay, well, that is what it is. If you come on a podcast and not willing to speak, then, I mean, that's how it is, you know?
No, there's a difference, man. I'm here to speak to you all day. It's just I can't give away the livelihood.
Okay, to be fair, that like me coming on here and just giving away all my biggest stories, you know, before I've reported on them. I know what you're saying. Jesus.
Well, what's the biggest story that you haven't reported yet? There you go. This should be out by then.
There's one that I've been sitting on for, I think it's getting towards a year now, that I've never been able to confirm, so it would be reckless for me to put it out there, right? That's the thing with my job. If I put something out there and it's just a rumor and it's wrong, like I can potentially cause damage to people's careers and leagues and tournaments and stuff, right?
So true.
What can I say? It involves a battle royale title and about three or four organizations, and that is all I can say. Cause I shouldn't even be saying that. But see, I'll go out on some ledge. I'll go out on some ledge, man. I don't know. I wish I could just blurt everything out. Like, if I could say everything that I've heard and that I've been able to confirm over the past couple of years that I've been working in this industry, fucking hell, mate. Like, no one would be left.
Yeah, I'd probably be gone somehow. Not that I'm a safe dude. Like, I didn't do something right. But, man, this has been this is a blast for me, bro. I appreciate all the old homage talks to COD4 and MW2 for this one, bro.
Oh, mate, I literally forgot half of this stuff. Like, that whole strike, like, jump thing has just changed my life again. I'm going to hop on Modern Warfare Remastered after this and have a few games now. But, no, so where can people find you online on social media and then kind of just, if you just want to talk about what you're doing with your multiple initiatives, if you wish, just to wrap this up?
Yeah, I'm 100% down. Wrap it up. I also got to go let my dog. Yeah, I'm going crazy. For me, it's just Skylar Johnson on Twitter, Instagram, and then pretty much just I just care about the businesses, man. Paper Crowns, Drink Control, those are the two businesses that I care about moving into 2020. We're going to drop some other ones. Biggest thing is I just want to say thank you for the support. Anyone that's watching this through me directing traffic or even you, I just appreciate the support over the years. I feel like my I hate the word fan base, definitely not fan base. My support group has been just solid the whole way. From the design team I work with to the people that just, you know, like things, retweet things. It's just this a cool thing, man. This community is family. So, and I appreciate you, man. Seriously, shout out for having me. I see the talent you have on here. Very thankful for that. So,
of course, man. And I appreciate you coming on. So, if anyone wants to find me, then I am at by Adam Fitch literally everywhere on every single platform. So, you can't really miss me. If you're watching on YouTube, feel free to subscribe. If you're listening on some sort of podcast platform that I'm not even aware of, then click whatever you want to click to get more of this. I don't know what it is because I don't use them. But so once again, thank you, Skylar, and thank you to everybody who's watched or listened to the podcast. I'll see you in the next one.
Appreciate you so much, man.
Cheers.